One starry night, as the wind whispers through the trees, a strange vessel descends from the stars and lands in a deserted field. From it emerge mysterious beings, their presence both mesmerizing and unsettling. As they approach, you can't shake the feeling that their intentions are far from benign. Are they here to study us, like curious scientists from another world? Or do they harbor darker desires, seeking to harvest our planet's resources, or even to enslave its inhabitants? With every step closer they take, the air grows colder, and the shadows seem to lengthen. And as the beings draw even closer, their intentions finally become clear. They're not here as friends or allies, but as harbingers of chaos and destruction. Their alien desires incompatible with the fragile existence of humanity. In that moment, as fear grips your heart and the world around you descends into chaos, you realize that you're facing a threat unlike any other. A force from beyond the stars that seeks to unravel the very fabric of reality itself. Welcome to Freaky Folklore, the podcast where we discover horrifying legends across the world and tell terrifying tales of monsters, both ancient and modern. This week, we are discussing the Hopkinsville Goblins, a real-life alien encounter that happened to a family of 11, 70 years ago. This show is part of the EerieCast Podcast Network. Find more terrifying tales at EerieCast.com, such as Destination Terror. You can listen to a new episode every week as I take you to horrifying destinations, both real and mythical. Be sure to follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcasting service. You can leave an honest review on iTunes, too. The more we get, the more we grow, and hopefully, the more monsters we can explore. You can now find Freaky Folklore videos on YouTube as well. If you would like to submit an encounter or suggestions for future episodes, you can email them to carmencarrion@gmail.com. That is carmencarrion@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter or Instagram for information on future episodes. Today's story was inspired by a true story, but it's written in the way that I imagine the events may have taken place, which makes this story fiction.
Lonnie, you feed and water them dogs? Mama asked my older brother Lonnie as we pulled into the drive leading down the dirt road to our house coming home from Sunday morning service. I knew he was telling the truth, because he had bribed me into doing it for him.
Water them dogs for me, Mary, and I'll give you my dessert after supper, he promised.
Whether he would or not was yet to be seen, unless he knew something I didn't know. Like Mama was making lemon pie or something he hated. I wondered why we were having dessert anyway. That was something reserved for special occasions. They were fed and watered before I left, Lonnie answered in a way that weren't a lie. Lying was bad, and we all knew that and tried our hardest never to tell an untruth. The Bible is very clear on what happens to liars. I learned that in Sunday school. Not to mention, Mama beat it into our heads with frequent reminders. When the old Ford truck came to a stop in front of our house, the trail of dust engulfed us, leaving a thin layer on everything inside, including our sweaty necks. Daddy had paid $800 for that truck when he was still working. I remember the day he brought it home. It felt like we were rich to have something so nice. He let us kids ride in the back when he took Mama for that first drive. Those were memories that made me miss Daddy most, even though it was harder to remember him as I got older. It was late August, and it still felt like midsummer in Kentucky. The old truck sputtered when Mama turned it off, and Lonnie jumped out, followed by my sister Charlie, and then me. Lonnie was 12,
and the man of the house since Daddy had passed away a few years back. Charlie was 10, but acted like she was grown half the time, always bossing me around. When she made me mad, I could call her Charlton, which was her real name. But mostly we got along pretty good. Sometimes I had to remind her that I was only 3 years younger than her.
"Go get your play clothes on,"
Mama yelled at me as I took off across the yard to play with the new puppies under the porch. She never let us play in our church clothes, since we didn't have much else nice to wear. "Yes, ma'am." I knew the routine, but the thought of them puppies with their cute, wrinkled faces was pretty distracting. I raced in the house and changed as fast as I could, but Mama stopped me before I even reached the door. "Mary, we have company coming. I'm gonna need you and Charlie to help me get dinner ready." So much for playing with the puppies, I thought, as I hung my head and headed to the kitchen where Mama was tying her apron on.
"Who's coming, Mama?"
Charlie asked as she grabbed Mama's only other apron off the hook on the kitchen wall. I couldn't have worn Mama's aprons even if she did have more than two. They'd have dragged the ground. "Your older brothers are coming and bringing their wives and some friends," Mama answered.
"Lucky's in town?"
I practically squealed. My two oldest brothers were grown men. Lucky was 25 years old, and JC was 21. Mama had been married once before Daddy, when she was a lot younger, so Lucky and JC had different last names. Lucky's real name was Elmer Sutton. Lucky was just what we called him. Mama said he had got the nickname Lucky because he had an uncanny knack at winning at those carnival games. He was my favorite person in the whole world, probably because I didn't have a daddy anymore, and Lucky was kind of like one to me. He gave me piggyback rides, tickled me, and called me Little Mary, all the things I like to imagine Daddy would have done if he was still around. Lucky had taken a job with the carnival, and that's where he met his wife Vera. I thought it was pretty neat, kind of like being famous, you know? But we didn't get to see him as often, so him coming home for a visit was kinda a big deal. JC's whole real name was Johnny Charlie Sutton, JC for short. He wasn't so bad either, but Lucky was still my favorite, even though JC could tell some pretty good jokes. JC and his wife Aileen lived on the other side of Hopkinsville, and they had more room, so Lucky most likely would be staying with them. "Mary, sit down at the table and crack these. Do you remember how I taught you?" Mama asked as she handed me a bowl of pecans.
"Sure, Mama."
Pecan pie was Lucky's favorite, but Lonnie hated it, so now I understood why he was willing to give up his dessert, so I would feed the dogs. I had a tidy little pile of pecan shells started on the table by the time Lonnie came in carrying a freshly killed hen from the backyard. Mama was going all out today. Fried chicken and pecan pie. It felt like a holiday, making the atmosphere kind of festive and exciting. An hour or so later, the house was filled with the delicious smell of fried chicken, biscuits, and pecan pie. I can still smell that dinner today. Makes my mouth water and my heart ache at the same time. I knew it was going to be a memorable day. I could feel it. But I had no idea how much it was going to change our lives. Lucky's car pulled into the yard just as we were setting dinner out on the table, as if he could smell that chicken the moment it hit the skillet. His 1955 Chevy was sleek and shiny and full of people. Along with Lucky's wife Vera and JC's wife Aileen, they had brought Billy Ray and his new wife, June, as well. All six of them packed in that one car. I'd never met Billy Ray or his wife, June, before. They worked with Lucky and Vera. So when they got out of the car and came in the house, I tried to get a real close look at the lady to see if she had stubble where her beard might have been. I guess I had the carnival mixed up real good with the circus. With that much company in the house, us kids got shooed out to the front porch with our plates come time to eat. But I could still hear every word through the screen door. In the summertime, we always left the doors and windows open, hoping to catch a breeze. I heard Lucky and JC telling Mama everything that had been going on in their lives, talking about work and whatnot. Then I overheard the whole story of how Billy Ray and June had met, married, and come to be visiting Kentucky with Lucky and Vera. Overall, it was a pretty nice dinner, and when it was over, the men sat on the front porch while the women helped Mama clean up the kitchen and do the dishes. I was relieved, because that let me and Charlie off the hook for chores for that evening. I always favored hanging with the men anyway. They were so much more interesting, with their hunting stories and stuff. Lucky had taken to smoking pipe tobacco, another smell that brings back memories for me. I sat on the edge of the porch with my legs swinging, listening to their stories until the sun sank low into the sky, and the women finally called the men back in to gather around the table and play a dice game called Farkle. I heard JC call it rat's ass once, until Mama threatened to wash his mouth out with soap. Grown man or not. I got a good laugh at that, imagining Mama holding down my very large brother and lathering his mouth with soap. And I had no doubt that she would and could do it either. It was a very humid evening, and if it wasn't for the mosquitoes, we would have stayed outside until Mama made us come in. I decided instead to grab my favorite book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And then I laid down in the living room floor pretending to read, while I listened to the grown-ups play. Charlie and Lonnie were reading as well, and I wondered if they were pretending same as me. What I really wanted to do was watch some TV. Lucky had bought one for us on his last visit, but Mama didn't like it much, even though she didn't say so. It was starting to get dark outside, and I knew with her distracted, I might be able to get her to let us watch the Ed Sullivan Show that came on at 8. I overheard Billy Ray ask Lucky if there was anything to drink, and I'm assuming he meant booze, because Lucky told him real fast that Mama didn't allow drinking in her house. He then directed Billy Ray to the well house that was out in our backyard, where he could get some cold water. We didn't have water running to the house yet. I turned my head when I heard Billy Ray's chair slide across the floor, and I watched him head out the back door. He was gone for what seemed like a good while, long enough for the others to joke about him falling in the well. His face looked a few shades more pale than when he left. The story he told would be enough to make me forget about the Ed Sullivan Show. Let's just say, it was the beginning of the scariest night of my life.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
In the early days of 2024, Florida found itself swept up in a peculiar rumor that swiftly circulated across social media platforms. Reports suggested the presence of a 10-foot-tall alien wandering through a Miami shopping mall, prompting a significant police mobilization in the area. The speculation intensified when a video capturing the colossal figure outside Bayside Marketplace went viral. The footage depicted the alien shadow amidst a crowd of police officers and cruisers with flashing lights. Following the video's virality, a surge of speculations and discussions ensued. One user, identified as X, remarked, "I don't know if the rumors about the aliens at the Miami Mall are real, but I do know I never saw this many policemen in one place." The atmosphere at Bayside Marketplace in downtown Miami escalated into chaos on a Monday night, marked by a sizable brawl among teenagers. However, social media users contended that the disturbance had an otherworldly element. Amidst the heightened police presence during the altercation, rumors quickly proliferated on Twitter and other social platforms, proposing an alternative narrative. The police were not responding to unruly teens, but rather to 8-foot-tall shadow aliens. An amateur video shared online captured moments when a substantial creature was visible at the shopping mall's entrance, leading online conspiracists to share their interpretations of the events that transpired that Monday night. This story may sound far-fetched, and many of you have already read about the story or watched the videos while rolling your eyes and then subsequently writing it off as a hoax. But hold up. This isn't the first time aliens have made an officially reported appearance on our planet. One such report took place on the night of August 21, 1955, when a large extended farm family called the Suttons arrived breathlessly at the Hopkinsville Police Station in southwestern Kentucky. The story of a terrifying siege by otherworldly beings would become one of the most detailed and baffling accounts of an alien close encounters on record, notable for the large number of witnesses, nearly a dozen, the duration of the encounter, several hours, and the close proximity between the witnesses and the creatures, sometimes just a few feet away. The incident quickly became regional and even national news. The alleged encounter occurred on the Suttons farm in the tiny rural hamlet of Kelly, Kentucky, where the family lived in an unpainted 3-room house without running water or a telephone. Of all the details of their story, the UFO landing and the appearance of small alien creatures, one fact is indisputable. When the 8 adults and 3 children arrived at the nearby Hopkinsville police station at about 11 p.m., they were genuinely terror-struck. In this incident, dating back to the night of August 21, 1955, the Hopkinsville Police Station in southwestern Kentucky received an unusual report from the Suttons. The Suttons, a sprawling extended family, described a harrowing encounter with extraterrestrial beings, making it one of the most intricate and perplexing accounts of an alien close encounter on record. On that Sunday evening, Glennie Mae Sutton Langford, 50 years old, had dinner with her oldest son, Elmer, also known as Lucky, Sutton, age 25, and his wife, Vera, age 29. Also in attendance was her other son, John Charlton, also known as JC, age 21, and his wife, Aileen, age 27. Elmer and Vera had brought 2 friends along for the dinner as well, Billy Ray and June Taylor, aged 21 and 18, who he and his wife worked with at a carnival. Glennie Mae's 3 younger children by her second husband were also present, 12-year-old Lonnie Langford, 10-year-old Charlton Langford, and 7-year-old Mary Langford. After dinner that evening, while the younger kids were occupied with playing games, the adults gathered around the kitchen table to play cards. At some point, Billy Ray got thirsty and went out to the well house in the backyard to get a drink. It would have been around 7:30, meaning the sun would have already set. And with darkness setting in, Billy Ray was able to see clearly as he caught an object moving across the sky toward the farmhouse. It was glowing, and as it moved closer, he noticed that it was shaped like a large disc, but with multiple colors of light streaming from the rear, and it was emitting a loud hissing sound. The object moved low over the farm and crossed several fields before disappearing into the woods. He could see a bright glow coming from that direction, and recently hearing about UFOs on the news, he was excited to get back inside and tell everyone what he had just seen. Well, they didn't believe him, They thought he was just pulling a prank. Elmer's exact words were, "Billy Ray, have you gone plumb crazy?" Billy Ray denied it being a joke, but eventually gave up when no one would listen, and got back to the card game. Things seemed to settle down for a little while, as they dismissed it as Billy Ray just seeing a shooting star. It was about an hour later, when the dogs outside began to go crazy, barking up a storm. The intensity of the ruckus they were making caused the young men to be curious enough to go check it out. And when they did, they saw the dogs run and hide under the house. As they looked out toward the tree line, off in the distance, they saw some movement, and someone or something seemed to be approaching the farm. As they watched, they could make out some type of weird creature. The men quickly ran back inside and shut the door. Glennie Mae was still in possession of her deceased husband's guns, which she provided to Elmer, J.C., and Billy Ray. Together, they had a 20-gauge single-barrel shotgun, a 12-gauge double-barrel shotgun, and a .22-caliber rifle. After arming themselves, they went back outside onto the porch. That is when they claimed to have saw a figure about 3 or 4 feet tall. They described it as having a large head with big, sharp-pointed ears on each side. They said the creature's eyes were located toward the side of its face, and that its face and eyes glowed. They also said that it had long, thin arms, with webbed fingers and claws. It was unanimously agreed that the creature's feet didn't touch the ground, and it seemed to be wearing a shiny metal suit. As it approached, it raised its hands in the air above its head. Glennie Mae was standing in the doorway, and she asked the boys not to shoot. She believed that the creature didn't mean any harm, but the men ignored her and fired anyway. When it was close to 20 feet from the house, they fired several rounds at point-blank range, but they said it made a sound like pellets hitting a metal bucket. The creature flipped over backwards and then rose back to an upright position, as if totally unharmed. It then ran off into the night. After standing watch in the yard for about 5 more minutes, the men decided the creature had left, and they headed back inside to the safety of the house and shut the door. Back inside the house, Elmer, Billy Ray, and J.C. began assessing their firepower. Just to be safe, Glennie Mae had instructed the children to hide under the bed. The adults were standing in the living room, discussing everything that had happened, when another creature appeared at the window as if trying to peek inside. J.C. Sutton fired with a 20-gauge shotgun right through the window screen from a distance of only 2 feet. The shot hit the creature and knocked it backwards. Unsure if they had hit their target, they took their guns and headed back outside to check around the house. Elmer had stepped outside, and Billy Ray was just about ready to step off of the porch when the women, watching from inside the house, looked out the door and saw a long, clawed hand reaching down from the roof, as if trying to grab Billy Ray's head. That is when everyone began to scream, except for Aileen Sutton, who grabbed Billy Ray and pulled him back. Elmer stepped out into the yard and looked up at the roof where he spotted the creature. He then fired his gun and knocked it up over the top of the roof, where it disappeared. Billy Ray stepped back outside, with his gun prepared to re-engage. He looked a short distance away and saw something up in a maple tree. There was another one of the creatures. He yelled at Elmer and they began to fire again. The creature was blown right out of the tree with their gunfire, but it didn't fall. Instead, it floated down to the ground and then moved quickly away. 20 minutes later, without any sign of the creatures, they turned on the porch lights in the front and the back of the house. The occupants of the house realized that they were helpless against the creatures. That is about the time that they come to the unanimous conclusion that their guns were useless against the creatures. And suddenly, once again, another creature appeared on the roof. The men shot multiple rounds at it, and it also floated down from the roof and landed on a fence 40 feet away. It seemed to rest there until Elmer and Billy Ray blasted it off with another round of gunfire that caused it to run away into the woods. Things seemed to finally calm down for a while. The women and the children were still in hiding. There was some suspicion amongst the family members that it may have been an elaborate prank. But since they were all in the same place, at the same time, they couldn't figure out how anyone could have carried it out. After several hours of this battle, finally around 11 p.m., they decided it was time to leave and go for help. Elmer Sutton and Billy Ray both had cars parked in the yard. Grabbing the children and their immediate belongings, the entire group hastily fled and raced to the Hopkinsville police station. Seeing the family so terrified and not especially enthused at the thought of a pitched gun battle in his small town, the local police chief took the report seriously. The police called for backup, and soon they were joined at the Sutton farm by state police, military police from nearby Fort Campbell, and of course, a photographer from a local paper, the Kentucky New Era. Despite finding shell casings from the gunshots, investigators discovered no other evidence, and there was no indication of heavy drinking. According to the Sutton matriarch, liquor was not allowed in the farmhouse. According to the people in the farmhouse, the goblins, or aliens, or whatever they were, had swatted away bullets for hours. When they finally vanished, the group reported the gun battle to the police. Law enforcement scoured the property, even hiking to the spot where the saucer had supposedly landed. The grounds were thoroughly searched for the aliens, but none could be found. It's still unclear if the investigators went into the low area behind the farmhouse to explore the ravine where Billy Ray Taylor saw the flying saucer land earlier that evening. Some say that the alleged landing site was not inspected, and that maybe it was possible that the flying saucer had landed to pick up the aliens and then departed. The only person who even flirted with confirming the story was a Kentucky State Police trooper who claimed to have seen a meteorite dash through the sky and slam into the ground like an artillery shell. In the aftermath of the 1955 event, numerous UFO enthusiasts descended upon the modest farm, eager to catch a glimpse of any potential traces left behind by the purported extraterrestrial visitors. The property was swarmed with reporters and curious onlookers, scavenging items and labeling them as souvenirs. The constant harassment and accusations of dishonesty eventually drove the family away. They departed within a mere 10 days. Interviews with family members and descendants described that fateful night as life-altering. It left an indelible mark on the family and the friends who were involved. And to this day, no one has ever forgotten the attack of the Hopkinsville Goblins.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
"You all ain't gonna believe what I just seen," Billy Ray blurted out before the screen door even slammed shut. Everyone at the table stopped and looked at him, getting themselves ready for a tall tale. "I seen a UFO. At first, I didn't know what it was. It looked like a streak of bright light moving across the sky real fast. I thought it might be a shooting star, but I noticed it was disc-shaped and had every color of the rainbow coming out its backside. It was flying pretty low over several fields out there, and then it kinda lowered down into the trees and disappeared. It looked just like them UFOs they'd been talking about on the news. "Billy Ray, have you gone plumb crazy?" Lucky asked, practically laughing at him. "No, I know what I seen, and I'm sure it was one of them there flying saucers they've been talking about," Billy Ray answered back. "Let's get out there and go down into that bottom and check it out to see what it is," Billy Ray continued, with what sounded like to me true conviction. Lucky, being stubborn and doubtful, replied, "Billy Ray, I ain't going out there gallivanting around tonight on account of some of your tomfoolery." After that, Billy Ray dropped it and everything just kinda settled down. But I was shaken. I had a real bad feeling. I snuck over to the door and looked through the screen out toward the trees. I didn't see any lights, so I went back to my book, but kept my ears perked. I was thankful when Lonnie finally asked Mama about an hour later if we could watch TV. We were getting pretty bored of looking at our books, but weren't ready to go to bed. Mama, just as I expected, quickly agreed, but before Lonnie could turn the TV on, the dogs started barking something awful. It wasn't out of the ordinary for them to be barking at critters at night, but they were obviously working themselves up into a frenzy, with the barking getting louder and louder, until Lucky decided he had better go outside and check it out. Billy Ray and JC got up and followed him, as men do. Lonnie, Charlie, and I had our noses glued to the screen door watching to see what was going on. The men were only outside a minute before the dogs stopped barking and ran under the porch to hide. I heard Billy Ray say, "Do you see that?" That's when I got goosebumps, from my toes clear up to the top of my head. But I didn't move. I just stood there, staring at the tree line, straining to see what they were seeing. Sure enough, there it was, something moving about in a grove of trees not too far off from the house. And whatever it was, it looked to be coming our way. It was the strangest looking thing I'd ever seen. At first, it looked like a little kid, maybe a little shorter than me. But then I heard JC say, "What the hell is that? It sure ain't human." All three of those big grown men turned real fast and came barreling back in the house. Me, Lonnie, and Charlie jumped out of the way, our eyes all bulging. I wanted to grab onto Mama, but I didn't want to look like a baby. "Mama, where's the guns?" Lucky asked. Mama had kept all Daddy's guns locked away after he died. She took off to the bedroom with my brothers and Billy Ray following close behind. Lonnie went too, but I heard Lucky tell him to go look out for the women folk. He came back looking sullen. When they came out of the bedroom, they were each armed with one of Daddy's rifles. I'm not sure what they were, I just know that they were guns. Mama was standing at the door watching, and I could hear her tell them not to shoot. But they must have been real spooked, because they didn't listen. From there, everything happened real fast, or at least it seemed to. The guns started going off outside. I could hear them firing from what sounded like every side of the house. JC came back in first to reload, and by that time us kids were hiding under Mama's bed. I could hear him telling the women that they saw a figure about 3 or 4 feet tall, with a large head and big sharp pointy ears, and it was coming towards the house. He said its face glowed with a yellowish color. It had long, thin arms that reached almost to the ground, with hands terminating in long webbed fingers and claws at the tips. He said its short legs didn't seem to touch the ground, like it was floating or something. He said it just hovered there, looking like it was covered in some kind of shiny metal. Charlie and I were both crying, and I could tell by the look on Lonnie's face that he wanted to cry too, but he was trying real hard not to. It felt like we were under the bed for hours. The men came back into the house to reload several more times, each time giving the women, who were now hiding in the bedroom with us, a little more detail about what was happening. At one point, Lucky was in the living room loading his gun, telling Mama what was going on, when Vera and June started screaming and pointing at the living room window. I remember backing under the bed until my feet hit the wall and covering my eyes. The creatures were trying to get inside the house. I didn't know what was going to happen. Were they going to try to kill us or what? I just know I was frozen, sick with terror. The event seemed to keep repeating. Momentary silence, then screams, then more gunfire. My imagination was running wild with horrible images as me and Charlie clung to each other under the bed, crying. That night was something straight out of a nightmare. The men, they were out there, standing firm against those strange creatures, firing their rifles as if their lives depended on it. Each shot pierced the night air, mingling with the scared cries of the women and us children, huddled together indoors for safety. Outside it was dark as coal, with only the moonlight peeking through the trees. Them critters, they was relentless, darting round like shadows, undeterred by the gunfire. But the men, they stood their ground, fighting tooth and nail to keep us safe. Inside, it was like a pressure cooker. You could feel the fear hanging, heavy in the air. Mama, Vera, and June, they was praying, like there was no tomorrow, while us kids, we were clutching to each other, eyes wide with terror. Then all of a sudden, the gunfire stopped, replaced by a silence so thick you could cut it with a knife. We waited, holding our breath, listening to the night. I heard Vera, June, and Aileen talking. They were thinking maybe the men were playing a terrible prank on us. I think that's just what they wanted to believe. But when they saw the claws trying to open the screen door and heard the little footsteps running across the rooftop, they stopped with that kind of talk. As the scary creatures kept getting closer, Lucky and JC looked all worried. Their faces were serious, and they kept glancing at each other, like they didn't know what to do. I finally crawled out from under the bed and jumped into Mama's arms, hugging her real tight, feeling so scared and confused. Charlie squeezed my hand, trying to be brave for me. Then Lucky said something about the creatures not wanting to hurt us. I didn't understand why they were coming if they didn't want to hurt us. But Lucky said we couldn't stay to find out. JC and Billy both nodded, looking real serious. Lucky said we needed to go to town to find the sheriff and get help. I didn't know what the sheriff could do, but if Lucky said so, it must be important. Quick as a flash, we all climbed into Lucky's car and the truck. I sat between Mama, Lonnie, and Charlie, feeling safe with them close. When the engine roared to life, I felt a bit better knowing we were leaving. The night outside was dark, but the moonlight showed us the way. I held on to Charlie's hand tight, knowing we were going to find help, and everything would be okay again. But nothing would ever be completely okay again. The sheriff came and brought men. The military came and brought more men. I thought they would help. The creatures were gone, but there were bullet holes everywhere, in the walls, in the roof, in the doors, and the windows. There was plenty of evidence that what we said happened really happened, or at least I thought there was. They didn't believe any of it. Some of them acted like they did, but really, they didn't. They wrote stories in the papers. The neighbors whispered when we walked by. The kids at school called us names. Eventually, we just moved away. That night left a lasting mark on every one of us. After that, Lucky wasn't so lucky anymore, but I know what happened that night was real. I know that my brothers and my mama weren't lying. I guess people just aren't ready to admit that we ain't alone in this universe. But that's okay. I'll be watching, and I'll look out for my family. because we believe, and we will always believe.
Thank you for listening to Freaky Folklore, the podcast about mankind's horrifying legends and myths. Don't forget to follow Freaky Folklore on Spotify and iTunes. If you can, leave the show an honest review on iTunes to help us grow. Freaky Folklore is part of the EerieCast Podcast Network, the home for listeners who love to feel scared. Go to EerieCast.com to find other terrifying podcasts, such as Destination Terror, hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. If you would like to submit an encounter or suggestions for future episodes, you can email them to carmencarrion@gmail.com. That is carmencarrion@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter or Instagram for information on future episodes. Until next time, stay safe out there, because this world is a strange one.